Hi, everybody. I'm Paul Yeager. This is the MTOM Show podcast, a production of Iowa PBS and the Market to Market TV show. It's time to go into the field for 2024. We have our two farmers set. We're going to introduce you to the first one for this year. His name is Brian Pippin. He's in Laurel, Nebraska, which is northeast Nebraska, so N-E-N-E. I guess south and west of Sioux City, Iowa, if you're trying to figure out where it is on a map. Brian is going to talk about his family operation, kind of how his path started as when he graduated school and went to the next level and to the next thing, kind of lay out his path, what his plans are there in irrigation country. We're going to talk a little bit about irrigation. Now, after we got done recording, we did talk a little bit about cover crop and no-till, and maybe we'll hit that later in these episodes with him as we discuss, like we have the last couple of years, with some farmers in different growing areas, just to kind of get a sense of what's going. And that's what we will do today with Brian Pippin. If you have any feedback for me or you want to just send me an email, it's paul.yeager@iowapbs.org. New episodes of this podcast come out each and every Tuesday. But now let's start with Brian and get to know him. What is the most famous thing about Laurel, Nebraska, Brian?
Ooh, put me on the spot right away. I don't know. We celebrated our Q125 a few years ago.
It's a town still in search of something.
Boy, I don't know. You might have done more research than I do.
You're in northeast Nebraska, right?
Correct.
Look out your window. What's it look like on the plains around you?
It's a little cloudy and gloomy today, but it's starting to green up. I don't know. What am I supposed to be looking for?
Well, you have green. That's the key, yeah. Right? You had rain this week.
Yeah, starting to turn green. We had probably a little too much rain this week, between 3 and 4.5 inches yesterday.
Is that normal when you get rain?
No. We've been dry for the last going on 3 years. So yeah, this is a pleasant surprise. I wish we could have saved half of that for in a couple weeks.
Were lakes and creeks and rivers low?
There's not a lot of lakes in our exact area, but the creeks were very full yesterday, and I'm not sure, nothing right around us right now, but I know there was people talking about that they were coming out of the banks yesterday, and a lot of water went through fields, and creeks were full, and it just seems odd to see, because we've been so dry the last so many years, the creek hasn't changed, and we're probably two-thirds irrigated, and it just seems like we've been irrigated nonstop the last 3 summers, so it doesn't seem normal. It's been like this in the past, but we kind of forgot what this is like.
Where does the water for the irrigation come from?
It's all underground. We have wells. There's maybe a couple around here that pump out of a creek, but everybody else is underground wells.
At what point can you tell how much water is still left in those wells?
It's hard for us to tell, but we have one irrigation system that just historically has been low, and like on a summer like last summer we get in, it just starts losing pressure and we have to shut it off every day or every other day, because it just, the first couple of towers on it will just start pushing air. You can hear it pushing air through it, and it's kind of a sign you can tell it's low. I don't have exact measurements on how low the aquifer is, but you can tell when you start losing water at the end.
I forget, you're not east enough for the Ogallala, are you?
Yeah, it's underneath of us.
It is. Yep. It is you.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And that have you always been irrigated as long as you remember?
Yes. And a lot of our ground is family ground. That was kind of my grandpa's deal. It seemed like when he was buying ground, they just automatically put a pivot on it right away when they bought it. And so a lot of ours are going to be 30 years old, because a lot of the ground was purchased in the 80s and 90s. And you can tell on the pad for the center points, they stamp in the concrete when the years were. And we have a lot of 1980s and a lot of 1990s pivots that, and that's when the wells would have been dug as well.
Go easy on saying the 80s and 90s are old, Brian. Yeah. Come on. Some of us still remember those era very well.
Yeah. All right. I'll remember that.
Tell me about your family. You said grandpa, he's the one that kind of started this all, or was there somebody before him?
Yeah, well, he's gone now. He passed away. This would be about 3 years ago now, but this would be my mom's dad. And so I started farming with a brother. I farmed with my brother and my dad to get started, but in 2013, my brother and I both were done with college, and we rented 240 acres from my grandpa. That's how we got started. We each had a full-time job, but we started with that. We split that. And so, yeah, we're going on 12 years now of us farming. But in 2016, my grandpa, supposed to be my mom's dad, my grandpa, my uncle, my mom's side, decided to retire. So that's kind of when my brother and I stepped in, and we kind of added some acres onto what our dad was farming. But it was still family ground, but it's on the other side of the family, you know, the mom's side. So we really kind of started farming full-time in 2016, and that's where a lot of our irrigated ground came from.
So 2016, you quit the town job, the off-farm job?
I worked the year of 2016. We started farming several more acres that year, and I worked through that growing season. Then like the fall of 2016 is when I started farming full-time during harvest.
What was the off-farm job? I'm just curious.
I started at John Deere and Wayne. I went to school in Norfolk, which is about 40 miles south, southwest of us at Northeast Community College, and went for diesel tech. So I did an internship in Wayne, Nebraska at John Deere. And I worked there until from 2012 to 2016, or 2014, I guess. And we actually had a big tornado went through and wiped out the whole building. And so they were starting over, and we were farmers in the area were renting out their shops, you know, for the employees to work in. And I met a guy, and they had a custom silage cutting crew, and I started helping them, and then I started farming. So I had a few jobs in between, but kind of tried to do some custom work on the side until we just started farming full-time in 2016.
Are you more of a repair guy or a build guy when it comes to the machinery types of things?
When I was at John Deere, I was working on mostly tractors, tractor inspections, tractor repair. We set up some new tractors that time of year when the tractors come in. They call it pre-delivered. We put the tires on, duals on, weights on, check fluids, just put in monitors, just kind of get them ready for the customer, whatever their list was. But mostly tractor work when I was there, kind of stuck to that. And there was an older gentleman there that kind of took under his wing and, kind of helped him. He taught me some things, and yeah, it was a good experience.
So 15 years ago, let's go back a little bit further, probably in your high school era. Was that when, were you always thinking that this was the path you were going to have to work off farm, hope that you could acquire a little bit of ground and then eventually go full-time in? Is that kind of what the path was?
In hindsight, I would say now, and I'd honestly say I was probably a little naive in high school. I just thought I would be able to farm. I really didn't understand. I liked driving equipment, and that's kind of where it stopped. I didn't really know the ins and outs of it, the business side of it, and, my brother and I both showed interest right away, and we were only 1 year apart in school, so we knew there wasn't enough to come back to, and I guess it just made sense. He went to school for agronomy, and I went to school for diesel tech, and he worked for a seed corn company. I worked at John Deere, so we kind of had different things and started farming a little bit, and then we had an opportunity, and kind of all happened at once, and decided that's what we wanted to do, and now here we are.
You sound like the perfect partnership with skills.
Yeah, well, at one time.
Well, who does the marketing? Who does the marketing? You didn't mention that. You mentioned agronomy, but not marketing.
We have that hired done. We actually work with a farm that does that for us. So, yeah.
Smart enough to know to go to someone else.
Yeah. And my wife, to get her involved, she works at the bank in town in Laurel. And this marketing team, they're closely affiliated with the bank. So they got me hooked in this, I think, 2018. And they work closely together. So it just kind of made sense. I went to a meeting, did a presentation, tried it, liked it, and stuck with it. So it's made things easier for my life. I mean, there's my brother just joined recently, more recently than I did. So, I mean, it works both ways, but you have to have a plan, especially now when things are as volatile as they are. It takes some of the stress out of it for me, and you kind of have a plan, and I know where I'm at. The banker knows where I'm at. They know where I'm at, and they all work together, and it just seems like you got to pay for it, but it does seem like it helps for me.
And you're not checking your text alerts throughout the day going, we'd lost a dime, we lost a quarter, we gained 50 sales.
Yes, it's protection and ease of peace of mind. And yeah, there's just many benefits to it for me.
On the repair side of things, do you find those skills coming in handy, or do you have new enough equipment that you're not allowed to touch it?
we're kind of in between right now, but yeah, we're getting to a point where we try to do a lot of things that we can, but we're getting to a point where there's some things that we still have to take down to John Deere and that we just out of our hands, don't have the resources, don't have the tools, and don't have the technology side of it to make those repairs ourselves.
What are you running here? Just straight grain? What's your machinery usage for?
Well, that was kind of funny too. Yeah, we were 100% green, worked at John Deere, but yeah, when my brother and I started making purchases, we did dip our toes into different waters. We have a red tractor now. We run two planters, both John Deere planters. We have a corn planter and a bean planter. We actually have a red tractor. It's a 2013 Case 290 we pull our bean planter with. And our sprayer is a Miller Nitro. So CNH owns them, but they're kind of their own brand. And I believe it's a 2014. So that's it. Everything else is green, but we do have two red things in the lineup now, I guess.
How long was it before you could actually say the word Case? You keep saying red, but I did hear you actually say Case.
Yeah. Actually, when I worked for the crew that does the custom silage cutting, they had some red quad track and some four-wheel drives in the pile. So I did have some experience with them. And I thought they were easy to drive. I do like John Deere's technology side better. I like the monitors. I like that side better. But just for running-wise, I have no problem with the Case tractor, I guess. And knock on wood, the Miller sprayer has been very reliable too. So we have 4 seasons with it and we have no complaints so far.
And you do a little bit of spraying on the side too?
My uncle, so we do some family stuff, but we spray for him. We don't do a lot of spraying, but we have a set of Y drops for it. So we go in late and do our nitrogen and we can fungicide late. So we do some custom work like that later in the season.
What is the grain mix that you're planning for this year?
This year we're 100% corn and soybeans. Only that's the only rotation this year.
Is there anything around you that's not that?
There's a little bit of alfalfa for guys that have cattle. 2 years ago, there was a little bit of wheat in the area. Not much, and that's very rare. But when summers ago, wheat, the prices kind of got up there a little bit, and there was a little bit of dabbling in that, but it's pretty much strictly corn and soybeans around here, except for the guys that feed cattle or have dairy cattle.
You are in the area between I-80 and I-90 when it comes to the horizontal of the world. So your ideal planting date for corn is when?
That depends on who you ask, but generally we get started the last week of April, it seems like. I know some guys will say May 5th or May 10th that they could plant all their corn in one day, which that's not realistic. But I know there's been years, I want to say 2018, we were done by May 1st. Everything, corn and beans were done by May 1st. Last year we didn't plant anything until May 1st. So it's hit and miss. A lot of times the 20-something of April, we do something, and we generally start with beans. This year we did it. This year we planted one cornfield, and that's all we've got done. But generally, I would say the last week in April somewhere is when we would like to get started.
And you've dabbled in the corn or the beans before corn?
Yeah. Since we bought a bean planter in 2017, we tried with the one corn planter the year we started farming the extra acres, and we knew we either had to upgrade and then we actually just added a second planter. So in 2017, we have done beans first before corn since 2017, except for this year. We did corn. Did one field of corn first just to try it. That was April 13th, and it was 83 degrees that day. It was 80 on Sunday, 80-something on Monday, so it had 3 days, but then we got between 3 and 4.5 inches of rain yesterday. So right or wrong, we'll see how that turns out. But it was just too nice not to be doing something we thought, and we just thought we'd try one, see what it's like that early, and so that's what we did.
Go back to the irrigation. Will you irrigate the beans too?
Yep. We're heavier corn this year for our rotation. I think I'm not sure we're quite 2/3 corn, but we're definitely heavier corn. And for mine, I'm with my dad and my brother, but we all have our separate acres. We all work together, separate farms. And I am 100% irrigated corn this year, and I'll have 2 fields of irrigated soybeans, then some dryland soybeans. So for me, I try to stay like in a 2/3 probably corn on my whole farm acres. And I like to keep it under the pivot, especially the corn on cornfields if I can.
You like the corn on corn to be under a pivot?
When possible, yes.
When possible. Okay. Yeah. How often is corn on corn for you? Is that a common thing?
It's getting to be, especially with the prices. It just seems like it's easier, more consistent for us to raise a better corn crop. Maybe not disappointing is the right word, but we've had a little bit lower yields than normal the last 2 years in beans. 2 years ago was real dry. Last year we had an issue with white mold in our beans, which was kind of new for us, and that was hard on some. And that actually was worse in the irrigated beans last year, from what we could tell. But something kind of new to us. So just as a general, the bean yields the last 2 years have been lower than what we're accustomed to. And it just seems like corn, we've been dry, but we have the availability to water. We did get a few timely rains, and it just seemed like the corn is a lot more consistent, easier to count on than beans. So it seems like the last couple of years, the way the markets have been, we've just kind of been planting a little more corn the last 2 years. So I would say we have some corn on corn every year, but this year I think it'd be like 400 acres of corn on corn probably.
And is your decision made regardless? Do you have any wiggle acres where you say, you know what, I think I'm going to flip, or is it pretty much just straight rotation for you?
Pretty much for me, it's straight rotation. We don't usually go more than 2 years of corn on corn, but we've kind of gotten to the habit the last couple of years of we like planting corn, then corn on corn, and then beans. So we're kind of on like a third year, at least under the pivots anyway. It seems like we can get that to work. It's a little more reliable, and that's just kind of where we've gotten comfortable the last few years.
And neighbors around you are kind of in that same philosophy or mindset?
Yeah, there's some guys that will rotate no matter what. Corn, soybeans every year. But it seems like some of the bigger guys and just other guys, it does seem like corn on corn is not uncommon. And some guys even go more than 2 years. But yeah, I don't know what term I would say, if it'd be a lot or not, but there is quite a bit of corn on corn, it seems like, in the area.
I think this summer when we chat, we'll have to be, I'm not necessarily saying you have to be under a pivot, but we may have to be near it. That's something I'm not as familiar with. Yep. I follow along and read these tales of some things work, some things don't. I mean, that's the nature of anything. But I mean, what does the pivot provide for you in your fields?
It's just a sense of, we just feel like we can push population. It just seems like that's our number one thing that we can't control is dry. I mean, we've had wind, we've had hail, we've had things like that, but it just seems like being able to irrigate, and it's more of a supplement than anything. A rain does way more good than a pivot, but it seems like it's enough, more so in the corn, but it's enough to get us by, kind of limp by until you get a rain or, you know, help in the meantime. But it just seems like it provides enough, and it's hard to tell. I think last year, I want to say we made like 12 circles with the pivots. And a lot of times we put on like 3/4 of an inch. Kind of depends on the well and the size of the pivot and how fast the pivot will run. But that's what we shoot for. That's what we're pumping. We're not sure we're getting all up to the ground, but that's what we're shooting for. But it just gives us kind of you're just more comfortable. You can rely on it to produce. And obviously it's usually on better farms too, but it'd be a whole different game here if we didn't have our pivots. We just kind of grown accustomed to them. And like I say, that's kind of my grandpa's philosophy is back then. He could buy a farm cheap enough and put a pivot on it, and then he wasn't worried about having crop insurance or hail insurance. And I think the hybrids have come a long ways too, that they dried down better than this and more tolerant to drought. But that was just their game back then. They would buy a farm, put a pivot on it and water it and be comfortable that they were going to raise a crop to pay their note off. And it seemed like it worked. And we just kind of, I mean, that's all I've ever known. We've been irrigating since I was little, and I don't really know what it's like without it.
The pivots are, you're saying there weren't a ton of them prior to like 1980.
Yeah, there was some, but a lot of the farms that my family purchased, they put the pivots on them. I'm not sure they bought a lot that already had a pivot on it. There was probably a couple, but a lot of them, they dug the well and put the pivot on when they bought them.
In those years where those off the farm start looking at you, throwing all that water into the air and irrigating. I mean, how loud are the drum beats around you about questioning your practices right now of using that water?
In 2012, which I assume was dry across the country, but it was extremely dry here, there was down by Wayne, I'll refer to that. That's like 15 miles south of us, and it's about a 6,000 population town. But they did have some like domestic wells down there that lost water because we got so low. And there's an area down there that kind of had a water protection rights or something. You could see the signs along the intersections where the boundary was. But it seemed like that raised awareness. And I don't know if there's a lot of anything going on right now, but I know we're still in an area from the last couple years where we can't – certain areas cannot dig new wells. You cannot add irrigated acres. If you removed an acreage, you want to swing your pivot on it, you can't irrigate that. So I know we have a farm where it's 280s. We can irrigate 180, and there's no fence, so the pivot can go around and do the other one. But we've been applying, we've been rejected the last several years, are just not releasing new acres. And they have a formula for determining soil types, farming practices, and what. And we send an application every year, and we keep getting denied. So it's just whether that more normal year for rainfall will release some more or what. It just kind of depends on what district you're in. And but yeah, so there's not a lot of conversation around where people are against what we're doing, but there is kind of some rules in place to keep it from getting digging wells, adding acres, and just kind of staying with what's already in the area now, for now anyway.
And the decision maker on those releasing the acres, that's a district, that's a water district that does that, or is it a county decision?
That's a water district, because it kind of follows own line. I'm not sure how those lines were developed. Ours is the Lower Elkhorn. So there's a Norfolk, Nebraska, mm-hmm. is where that NRD district, the natural resource or something district, in our natural NRCS, whatever they call it. But there's a board, they're elected, and they're the ones that determine what acres get released and what doesn't.
And let's talk about those 80s that are next to each other, the one that gets it, the one that doesn't. How much of a financial, your cost of production is a little different, but your cost of what you take off of there is different too.
Yeah. And last year, so the dryland side actually produced pretty good. But I would say there's probably last year it was corn. I would say there's probably a 20 or 30 bushel difference from dryland side to irrigated side.
So is that normal for a spread?
That's a pretty good farm, pretty consistent farm, and we farm it, you know, but that's also different prices of farming it too. But, I would say that's pretty normal. And I would say it could be more. 2 years ago, I want to say it was 2 years ago. So, you know, like a pivot, if you have a square quarter, it's 160 acres, you really only irrigate like 130 of it. So you have about 7 acres in each corner that doesn't get irrigated. And 2 years ago, on our yield maps, we were almost 100 bushel an acre short in the corners versus the pivot. Which, granted, we weren't planting the corners. We vary the population, but it's still the hybrid, the maturity for what you're planting under an irrigated farm. So it's probably not exactly meant to go on a dryland corner, but it's just the way it works. But yeah, it seemed like that's been the most drastic I've ever seen it. But we had very good irrigated corn that year, but our whole field averages didn't sound anything special just because of the 25 to 30 acres in the corner was so far behind. It kind of brought the whole field average down from what it actually seemed like when you were combining.
A few poor performers bring down the whole average. Yeah, I hadn't thought about it in that context.
Yep, because we're all center pivots for irrigation. We don't do any flood irrigating, none of that. It's all through the pivot.
Around you, okay, so you're saying you're going to be 2/3 corn this year?
Probably not quite, but it'll be close.
And then a third of that 2/3 is corn on corn? Did I get my math right?
No, I think we'll have about a little over 1,600 acres of corn this year, and I think about 400 of that will be corn on corn. So the other 1,200 acres will be just following soybing stubble.
You've soybeans on some of the others, and so on a given week, given you've given them the grain marketing to someone else, how much do you watch on when you see prices? I mean, of course it affects you. It's not that it doesn't affect you, but how much do you angst over the movement of these markets on a week to week basis?
I still watch every day and I still get the text every day. So, I mean, I know what it's doing, but, I guess we have things in place and a lot of stuff is on the board. So a lot of stuff I'm doing this time of year, I'm just setting a basis. I mean, it was sold earlier on before it was even raised. And so I guess now it seems like where we're at right now, which isn't every case for every year, but it seems like now the basis has been improving. So it's not as stressful for me. I know the price overall doesn't sound that good, but for me, it's last year's crop. I mean, I know where I'm at and I kind of have an idea where I'm going to be. So it's not, mm-hmm. emotion-wise, it's really not affecting me a whole lot right now. It's just kind of now you're looking, kind of think about next year already and the outlook and where your break-evens are and what it's going to take and just kind of in the back of your mind.
So you're done with 23? You've marketed all of that?
Yes. And I shouldn't say that. There'll probably be a 1% or 2% left over that we can't.
I was going to say, you got a couple of gambling bushels left?
Yeah, just because we got to sell it in like certain intervals. So, I mean, it doesn't always come out just even numbers. So we'll get to the end of the bin, we'll clean it out. There'll be a little bit of leftover. It's always hard to tell when the corn shrinks and just exactly where we're at. But I would say there's probably 1% or 2% that's not sold or had anything done.
And then how much of, and you're kind of giving me the sense of maybe you've already sold a bunch of 24?
I wouldn't say a bunch, but yes, I have stuff done for 24 already. I even actually have a small percent done for 25.
Okay. Yeah. You feeling good about that, it sounds?
I don't know. I guess I Yeah, I would say I feel good about it. It's just, yeah. I know I'm still going to have machinery costs and certain expenses in 2025 too. So I guess it's just a matter of doing a little bit. I mean, it might be 5 or 10%, but it's just the fact that there's a little bit done because I know I'm going to have some costs and seems a little scary, but we have crop insurance. We have several irrigated acres. So I guess I'm not necessarily concerned about never, you know, having a complete disaster. I mean, I feel comfortable raising, I should be able to raise something. So I guess I'm not afraid to sell a little bit ahead of time and just have something in the works.
Yeah, and helps you sleep at night too.
Yes. Yep.
All right, Brian, I appreciate it. Good luck this spring. Hopefully the rains. Yeah, I know. You'd like that 3-inch rain. 1 inch per month would at least help and be more than what you've had, or once a week would be fine too.
Yes, or even just get spaced out. It did come sort of fast part of yesterday, and that was part of the problem. I think we could have held a lot of that if it wouldn't have come quite so fast, because, I mean, we've had some nice rains this spring, like over-inch rains, which we were kind of needing because we had one big snow event this winter and that was it for precipitation. We were did seem like we had a rain last fall, but we were dry going into harvest, dry coming out of harvest, had some unseasonably weather in December. Nice. February was nice. March was nice. So yeah, we were ready for a rain. And like I say, if that rain would have come in twice that amount of time, probably could have taken a lot of it. I think it's just, we got at least a third of that or half of that very fast. And I think that's kind of where we ran into our problems. Too fast what we could handle.
That's the one where you just shake your head and go, seriously, we just, come on. Yeah. I guess those downstream eventually in the Missouri and the Mississippi will appreciate it.
It's been a long time and I wouldn't say I wanted to stop, but there was a point yesterday I kind of just wanted to stop raining for a little bit just so we could get caught up. I hate to say that. Yeah. But it just, yeah. A little too much, a little too fast.
Especially the last 3 years that you've had. So,
yes, I know.
All right, Brian, thank you so much. We'll talk to you later this summer.
Yep, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
My thanks to Brian. If you have feedback for the MTOM Show podcast, send it in an email to the show in general, markettomarket@iowapbs.org. New episodes come out in video form on our YouTube page as well, in audio. We know many of you listen to this as well. The video component, it's just an offering. Thanks for taking part. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.